You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario.
I'm old, I'm gray, body messed up in every way. I'm getting older day by day. I'm getting older day by day. I don't miss my youth, I'm lying. Don't miss my Super Nintendo, you know I'm lying. Don't miss my paper jeans. And my body don't wear paper jeans.
Today I'm speaking with B.A. Johnson, a musician based out of Hamilton, Ontario, who just released a children's book called Gary the Seagull. This interview was originally recorded on August 11th, 2020. I guess to start with, can you introduce yourself for listeners?
Hello, podcast listeners. My name is B.A. Johnson. I am a Hamilton-based entertainer. And yeah, song person, player.
Well, your role as an entertainer has recently expanded from music performance. Do you want to tell people, I guess, about the very most recent addition to your sort of artistic profile, and then maybe we can go back in time through some of the other ways you're known?
Yeah, like the kids book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a kids book about a seagull named Gary, which got published, and it's out now in bookstores and the Amazon, I guess. So that's been a bit of a departure from my usual job, which is entertaining drunks in bars. So this has been a nice change of pace for me, I guess. It's different because I guess the book came out during COVID, so I don't know what it would be like to put out a book normally, so I have no reference point.
Mm-hmm. What has it been like, even without that reference point? What does a COVID release look like for somebody new to this experience?
It's kind of a bummer, just because so much is going on, and it feels like everything gets lost in the shuffle, and you can't properly promote things. People have been very supportive, like a lot of people have been emailing me and placing orders, which is nice. But it just feels like I wanted to go be an author and sit in like a bookstore, and get that glory, you know. But I guess I don't have that. It's not happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I suppose it would be delayed. I grew up in a town with Robert Bunch, living here, and I feel like he came around kind of all the time. It didn't seem like there was a specific tour he was necessarily on. I think he was just kind of always there. And so in my mind, I picture now that you have a book, you have like free reign to like go read to children now whenever you want. But I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, I don't know if I'm allowed to read to children. It's kind of weird. Like libraries reach out because we want you to do a book thing eventually, like a book reading, or people have been like, eventually we want you to do things, but I just worry that they will forget it by the time we hit eventually.
Yeah. What are you responsible for when you put out a children's book? Like how independent is this versus how much support from some sort of industry is it?
I mean, I can only speak for Gary the Seagull. It's been very weird. The publishers were very excited about it, and now we don't talk to, like, the illustrator and I really don't talk to them. Like, they don't really return emails unless we're buying copies of the book. And they are a real publisher, so it's, I don't know if they are just busy with other books or with COVID, or they hate Gary the Seagull, or we're annoying. Like, it's hard to know. I guess they have a publicist. We haven't really done much of anything.
Okay.
I have no idea. I mean, everything I've done so far has been independent, where I get nervous trusting other people to do anything because I have a feeling they won't do it when every time someone else is supposed to do something, they don't do it. So are they promoting it? Are they telling anyone? But I also don't know how any of it works. So maybe I'm just have a lot of free time and I'm paranoid about it. because this was my ticket out of entertaining drunks. I kind of had it in the back of my mind. I was like, maybe you don't have to do that anymore. Maybe you could just write books about seagulls forever.
Well, yeah, let's talk a bit about that, because I was curious how, in my mind, even though, like, the content of your music has, like, an element that doesn't seem like a super far world from children's entertainment, in the sense that there's a zaniness and a funness to you that, you know, it's not like the antithesis of, but I do think someone might wonder how you go from the bar performances that you do to children's writing. What was that journey like?
Yeah, I mean, like most people that start doing stuff for kids is because you have a kid. Like every single person I know who started doing kids things is usually based on the fact that they had a kid. So your life changes totally. And you start thinking about kids stuff. And yeah, so I didn't really want to be a kid's musician ever, but I mean, writing a kid's book, it just kind of made sense because it was just a story I told my kid, and we go to the beach a lot, so there's a lot of seagulls around.
Okay. Can you, for listeners who have not yet tracked down this book, can you tell us listeners what the plot line is of Gary the Seagull?
Gary the Seagull is a story about a kid at a beach who is trying to eat lunch, and the seagull named Gary is trying to steal the lunch. He eventually has to wear a bunch of disguises to get the lunch. Yeah, it's mostly just, it's a book about a seagull trying to steal a kid's lunch. That seagulls do.
Is there like any kind of moral or point at which you sort of come around to a new perspective or understanding?
This has been the critique of Gary the Seagull, is there is no, like many things in life, there is no moral. The moral really is don't feed seagulls. They want more all the time.
Okay.
But no, there is no actual moral, which people have brought up in their reviews saying, where's the moral? Not everything has a moral, people.
Yeah, actually, I don't. I think there's lots of children's books that don't let the pigeon drive the bus. Like, that's a classic, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call that a moral.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, there's no real lesson. This is just like most things I do. It's entertaining, briefly entertaining.
Well, can we talk a bit about your music? I always love the idea of people tuning in that know nothing. And so you have like a pretty epic history. You've been performing for a long time. You're, in my mind, a well-known name on the Canadian indie music scene. I also know I have listeners who don't pay any attention to independent music and may not know much at all. So,
I mean, for someone as popular as I am, I'm not popular. I guess if you just do it for long enough, you'd get... Someone told me that if you play music for 10 years, you'll be famous.
Someone told you that?
Someone did, yeah.
How long ago?
I don't know who told me that. Someone in a bar, probably. But yeah, I don't know how famous I am. But I guess I've just been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. How long ago were you told that 10 years was the special amount?
It's been 10 years.
Oh, okay. Because you've been a musician much longer than that.
Yeah, I think I'm on 16 years. I think my first tour was 2003.
Okay.
So 17 years. Ew.
Yeah, because I think I saw you in maybe some of the earliest days performing, I want to say, at the Albion.
Yes.
And
those were fun shows, yeah.
Yeah, you had a song about squirrels, I think.
Yes, squirrel song.
Okay.
Songs I don't play anymore from my past.
Yeah. And you may have been performing with Wax Mannequin?
Yeah, and you guess Wax has been doing... I mean, there are people that have been playing for as long as me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you too.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people still in the long haul. I find that music, I think we're supposed to be more disposable.
Like, we're supposed to expire?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think the people that control the business would be happy if every 5 years... It was just a new round of people they could sell to someone else.
That's an interesting... I can see that in a lot of genres. I also feel like I haven't exactly recognized people coming up behind us, like, eager to take our nichey spot, and we're depriving them of that journey. Yeah.
I only notice the younger bands when they open for me and they become far more famous than me.
Yeah.
That's when I'm like, oh, yeah. those guys that I cannot open, that won't let me open for them suddenly.
Yeah, so many of those. There's that Canadian music documentary about that band Anvil, I think they were called. Yeah, and it's the same, it's similar plotline, like all the people that they crossed over with were all like really well-known, amazing whatevers, and he's like a janitor in a high school.
Yeah, he gets to be Anvil. Yeah, I guess I get to be Anvil too, maybe.
And I think I'm Anvil too, I think. Yeah. But I've seen
Anvil. They were quite good. There was people there.
Yeah. Well, there are people at your shows too. Like, that's the surprising thing. Well, I didn't want to say it was surprising, but where it was really notable was when you did one of these live stream performances, and it was from the St. Hollywood. And I think by then that was around the time that we knew that we wouldn't see another The St. Hollywood show, even after the quarantine, that might be it for live music there at all. But you had about 1,000 people tune in.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy for me. Just as well, anything I do that a lot of people watch usually has some fails. So there was a lot of technical problem. Like, the bar was like, we should get a person to help with the tech stuff. And then when the guy showed up, he was like, it was his first day. Like, he was like, I just want to learn how this works. And I was like, I think you should know how this works, because we're going live in like 10 minutes. Like, I didn't know how to go live on Instagram. Like, I couldn't figure out how to get my phone to do it. And
yeah,
it just seemed like I don't capitalize on these things as well as I should.
Well, okay, but so when I picture seeing you perform in real life, and I picture somewhere like Jimmy Jazz, it feels like if you're playing like a particular type of venue on a particular type of night, if people have been drinking a certain amount or there's a certain amount of rowdiness, sometimes like the night is full of kind of the chaos and confusion and grit and like kind of feelings while watching you, and it almost felt more appropriate to see that struggle from that tech side in the live stream than if you were suddenly performing in like the most perfect lighting with the smoothest internet feed. And like, I don't know how I would have felt if it looked like you were like doing a Tiny Desk concert or something. I don't know. It felt like the live stream equivalent of the Jimmy Jazz.
Yeah, I mean, that's what my takeaway from people was, they were expecting it to be hot garbage.
Yeah.
I just get sad because I'm like, think of all the people that were tuning in that don't know who you are, and there's no audio, and the video's a wash. You just seem like a demented hobo.
Do you think in that 1,000 people there were a lot of new BA watchers?
Maybe. People were at that time were just stuck at home watching stuff. Mm. So I think there was a lot of random people that were just like, what's this? Or people that had heard my music but had never seen a show, like some Americans were watching, I know, and they were like very like, is this what it's supposed to be like? And people were like, yes, it is. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the live streams, it was good because I think people had a good time. The people that get past the technical horribleness, which is the same as my live show.
I know it's not my job to throw slugs at other slobs, but I see seagulls in the rearview mirror, and they're getting nearer and nearer. Buddy, clean up your car. It's a bin. Buddy, clean up your car. Bin. Buddy, gotta clean up your car. It's a bin. Buddy, clean up your car. Your car literally is a bin.
Well, so it never once occurred to me that people would tune in to live streams randomly, and I suppose they might, but it would never occur to me to do that.
No, me neither. I don't think I've ever watched a lot. I think I've watched like 10 minutes of a live stream.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I think maybe for this one, because all the bars were boosting it, like all the bars that gave me messages shared it.
That's right.
It had a really big reach, so there would have been like, I guess, like a random guy who liked like Amigos in Saskatoon, and when they shared it, he stumbled along. I don't know, maybe there was just 1,000 bored BA fans. Maybe there was every fan in the country, maybe.
Well, also, even if people were tuning in and couldn't really get it, there's got to be something to be said for seeing, you know, 999 other people who do. So, you know, like if I imagine people going to any one of your concerts for the first time who don't know all the inside jokes or, you know, don't have the low line ready to sing back to you would probably be mildly confused as to how you already have so many people that know, like, to yell, like, you know, GST checks or whatever it is. So I don't know, maybe it still works in your favor to create a bit of mystery through the tech scramble.
I find the live streams, it was always so hard because I'd always be so nervous about my crummy internet or something breaking, and it was, and then you're playing to no one, so it was so bizarre. Like I get three live streams, and oddly they did feel kind of good, but I was just such a nervous wreck for all of them. Like, so nervous that something would break, or I'd forget the words, or the internet would die, which it did for a couple of them. So, yeah, it was live streams. I don't know. I think I like being in it just live without the stream. I don't want to stream.
Yeah, when I watched you that one, the beautiful thing was I started messaging and being messaged by other people watching from around Canada. And, you know, because they get those little notifications, like, so-and-so is watching with you. And my friend Chad in Edmonton had just had a baby and had just got your children's book. And it was just like, or had just ordered it, I guess, back then. But it was just like, it was actually like a really beautiful, I was feeling, you know, the earliest stages of the kind of isolation and pining for all the things you're not sure when you're going to get to do again. And I've never had such a beautiful bonding moment at a BA show because the chaos of, you know.
No, I think it did. I mean, like, I'm already forgetting what it was like to be super locked down, but it just definitely, I think it did kind of bring people together because people were virtually watching with their friends. Mm-hmm. And then they could chat with each other, which I think live streams, that's the thing I do like about them, is it does seem kind of like a community event. Mm-hmm. Whereas bars, it's just a bunch of like rando losers. It might not be really a community as much as, like, enemies.
Yeah, or even just the sheer fact that you'd have to yell over the music to talk, which would be so rude and not helpful and all those feelings, too. I also think it was amazing the highlights you did on those bars. I think that was a big part of the sentimentality for me as a touring musician, was I've been to so many of those same places, and no one has ever given a spotlight or like the video over to the bar owner. I thought that was actually just a really beautiful tribute because as much as I have my favorite bars, it's not like I, you know, do radio interviews with them, or before that point at least. And so I thought that was like a really nice touch. You took this new format in a totally different direction.
Yeah, I mean, I was still very nervous about all the bars. Like, I think two or three of the bars from the live stream have closed. Mm-hmm. And I was just feeling really bad for all the bar owners because the people, because it's kind of like they're my family in a lot of ways. Like, I see like bartenders more than I see my cousins and stuff like that. So, I mean, and I stay on their couches and have breakfast with them and we hang out. So COVID hit and everything closed. I mean, I felt really awful for all that. I mean, I felt bad for myself, but I felt bad for everybody else too, I guess.
Yeah. Has it been long enough since then? Like, I guess it's been 4 or 5 months now. Have things started to shift to feel like a new version of what your kind of livelihood and approach to performing is going to look like, as opposed to, you know, trying to squeeze in something resembling before into new formats? Have you started to lean into or find anything that's working that's completely different?
I mean, I started playing private parties on driveways, like socially distanced concerts with like my own PA that's in the car, and I play on people's lawns, and I'm doing a lot of them, I guess, or enough of them. But it seems like when COVID first hit, I'd talk to all the bar owners and all the bookers, and we'd all talk and be worried, and it seems like now everyone's just not talking anymore. Like, it seems like it's almost every person for themselves, like, because I guess maybe the survival has really kicked in, whereas, I mean, the bar, like, the bands are now just like, I'll play house parties or I'll play, you know, people's backyards, and the bars are just basically like, how can they try to stay open as best they can? And it just seems like everyone's just scrambling right now. I kind of rotate between feeling rich because I just play people's driveways and being like very nervous for like Christmas time when it'll be too cold to play people's driveways and I'll need to get Christmas.
Right. Oh man. Yeah, how far out did you used to, like, plan or prepare? Because, I mean, even when you're not in driveways, there'd be some amount of seasonal limitations to
Oh, yeah, like, I had, before COVID hit, I think I was booked until next Christmas, basically. Like, when it hit, I was booked, yeah, like, till, I guess, November of 2020. I was just kind of watching everything get canceled. And I was preemptively booking things in the summer because I canceled everything in the spring, so I moved a bunch of stuff to the summer kind of hoping it would be a quick turnaround, and then I also didn't know where I was going to get money from, and then those all got canceled, and now I've canceled everything in the fall, and I'm just basically playing private parties, which is because I don't, the bars aren't even returning emails now, whereas I don't know if the shows I have for October, November still exist.
Right.
Everyone's, I think, like, they're not that worried about my BA show at their bar. They're worried about, like, will they stay open for another month, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting, like, the couple times you've mentioned not hearing from, like, the same thing with your publicist. And so sometimes I have, like, friends or people in my life that disappear for a while. And then when they come back, there's something really exciting that they were doing. And a little part of me has been clinging to, like, maybe some of the drop-off in communication is some real, like, bunkered-down thinking and planning for a new something.
It is. I haven't figured it out. Aside from going, like, if I get really sad, I research, like, going, becoming a long-haul trucker, which I do, like, once every 2 weeks. But I mean, I think I've spent too long playing music to want to do something else, if that makes sense. Like, it feels rough to be like, if I was going to retire, which I mean, it's probably going to happen at some point, I kind of want to do it on my own terms. I'm a little bitter that, like, if I have to quit now, it's because of a pandemic. I mean, I guess that's a bit selfish, but I mean, no, I want to say when I quit, you know?
Well, it feels like a certain threshold, like, can be a pause. And then after a certain length of time, like if you have you're trying to watch a movie on VHS and your VCR starts acting up, there's a certain amount of time you can bang it or go get a drink, but after a while you're not watching the movie anymore.
No, it happened last night, and I agree with you.
Yeah. But it's still not finished, you know? That's the thing. Like, you don't get the satisfaction of having finished watching it, but that doesn't mean it's done.
No, and I think, I mean, the show is going to go on. I think it is going to, I think you're right. I think things are going to change. I don't know if there'll be less bands or more bands, or maybe it'll be good and the stuff will shift and become hyper-local for a while, which is possible. Like, I have actually a bar show with in Peterborough for September, and it's not the only show he has booked, but he's basically saying it's going to be all, like, there'll be no touring bands for him, really. It's going to be all local stuff, which is, I guess it's good in a way, because then we can see, I mean, people don't respect local bands as much as they should. Maybe now people will go see more local bands, and maybe people will support more local businesses too, I guess.
Yeah, well, that was one of my brain's gone so many different places as possible ways this plays out, and that was a big one for me. When I interviewed Brody from the Casbah and talked about venues and what the history, like, future performance looks like, at the very least, at some point easing back into performance, there's going to be nobody touring from anywhere particularly far, right? Like, regardless of whether it's hyper local or it's just not somebody who came from another province that night,
yeah,
or anything think, unknown, you know?
There, like, aside from me, I don't know who's going to go tour.
Well, no, yeah, but bands that would have flown to a festival from somewhere else, for example, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. But I think maybe that, because there's the local bands that maybe already exist that would potentially get some spots again. But there's also, like, potentially, you know, the people who technically play music, but they hide out in their house doing it.
Yeah.
And they, you know, have not yet, thought of themselves as someone who has, like, earned a stage. Yeah. And those are people that I would love to see come out, like, to be playing with maybe established locals.
Yeah.
You could have, like...
That's probably what scenes were like 20 years ago more, when, like, you know, Halifax had this crazy scene and, you know, Hamilton had a crazy scene. I think it's because the band touring was really hard to do. Mm-hmm. They just kind of played with all their buddies, and then people were like, this is great, and they would form bands. Guelph too. I mean, all these places have these really kind of great music communities, and I don't, there's not that many places in Canada, I think, that really have that music community, lots of bands, stuff going on, and maybe this will bring that back, which would be actually great.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, because I think the same way, well, even you and I having the shared experience of being able to refer to all the bands that we played with that then became too famous to play with us again, that wouldn't have been possible unless there was a period of time where we could be a nobody and share the stage with an almost somebody. Like, at some point, I feel like, you know, I had stories about these amazing bands that I got to open for, and those opportunities are just not tossed around casually anymore to the unknowns, you know?
I mean, I don't even get opening spot. Like, it's hard to get an opening spot for a cool, kind of bigger band. I mean, it's easy to get an opening spot for, like, my level of... That. You can open for me very easily. If I want to open for somebody, it's not that, like, because it's like, if you don't have the right booking agent or the right industry people, then those avenues are going to be closed. Like, the booking agents will straight up, even if the band wants you to open for them, the managers and agents will say no.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting that it's gone that direction to such an extreme, because, you know, we're seeing a younger generation that isn't coming out to shows as much as it used to. At least that's my observation.
I just assumed my fan base was aging.
I think it's a combination. I think they are.
Kids don't come out anymore? I don't know.
Well, I have sometimes wondered if the younger generation now isn't as inclined to just kind of blindly follow you as you tell them who they would like. Like, I don't know if it was before, like, respecting people older in the scene or just a lack of things to do, but it seems harder to find, like, the special way of putting a poster together or a line you can put on a poster that entices young people who know nothing about that thing to come take a chance on it.
Yeah, they're not going to care about my, like, going to see an old man. I find I just play with really young bands.
Yeah.
But I don't know if every town even has really young bands anymore. I always had a rule, you can't have, like, two old bands on a bill.
Yeah.
Like, three old bands was definitely, you can't have three old bands. You can have two, maybe, but you need one young band for sure.
Oh, yeah. So maybe that's why you do have young people at your shows, because you are being smart.
Their fan base.
Yeah.
That's, but I don't, like, I'm thinking of, like, across the Canada where I play, like, it's hard to find the younger bands now, I guess. Maybe I'm getting older, which is probably part of it, but maybe there's not as many as well, I don't know.
Well, I think, like, the young people, the young musicians in town could tell you who the other young musicians in town are. But if there's no venue in a town that pays attention to that, even that first young band, then who are you going to ask? Like, who do you reach out to in Saskatoon or Nelson, BC or wherever to ask what the young band scene is like if you don't have a young person on the inside?
Yeah, talk about your young connection.
You need, like, a VA ambassadors, like a young VA ambassadors.
I mean, yeah, somebody.
Yeah. I don't know. I really want something, like, new to be born out of this unprecedented time. But I want it to be, like, created by or fostered or mentored by existing people who have really, like, been dedicated to the form. Like, yeah. I'm actually not super as concerned about, like, the venues themselves as much as the people who operated venues that I loved being okay. You know, like, I don't mind it being a new space or a new capacity or a new perspective, but
I get sad for the really old places.
Yeah.
like this ain't Hollywood was a bar for like 120 years and now it's just going to be like luxury apartments. It's just depressing. But I mean, it's a building and you're right. It's, I'm more bummed about, like, I played a driveway show for the Opera House's out of work sound techs and people that work at the Opera House, and they are legitimately devastated by not being able to work. And I mean, it sucks because those guys, like the one guy who's a sound tech there, I think that guy did sound for me like 15 years ago. So, I mean, he's dedicated his life to doing it, and now he's just watching me in a parking lot.
You're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with B.A. Johnson, a musician out of Hamilton, Ontario, who just released a children's book called Gary the Seagull.
You kissed me at the bus station as the fog rolled in. It was 6 a.m. in the morning. Homeless people hanging around, drinking McDonald's coffee in downtown Hamilton bus station. Oh, you were so cold, you pulled your coat around your neck. It was a long walk downtown. Oh, you were so cold, you pulled your coat around your neck. You were going back to Vancouver. Your face, breath hanging in the air. You hold me on the platform. I can see your face, breath hanging in the air at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, it's really takes on its head. I don't know. But, you know, there's been a lot of those sorts of quarantine memes, like, I saw one the other day that was like, the last band you saw live is who you're quarantining with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So.
And I was somebody's, which was exciting. Me and Jeff Berner were somebody's. And I was thinking, you know, like, if even if we made a version of that, but it's your own town, I mean, you've got Wax. Like, for me, you having Wax Mannequin means you're going to be in the best town.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that things are going to... Something new will have to happen. I mean, this is, right, it's unprecedented. I've never lived through anything like this. You think if anything's going to change stuff, it's an experience like living through a pandemic, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, like, you became a dad, and it added to the things that became important to you, but it didn't stop you from still making music. And yes. I went through that myself, I guess, and so...
I think that does mess up a lot of people that play music, though.
Yeah.
They didn't... For me, it was just like, that's what I do, so I was kind of like, this is my job. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people are like, they want to quit, or they reevaluate everything, which maybe I should have done. I don't know, but I did not. And I was kind of like, daddy's going to work. See you next month.
Yeah, you're the vacuum salesman of the 2020s.
Yeah. The old vaudeville guy being like, yeah, I'll see you later.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
When I'll come back from tour, you'll be toilet trained.
But, you know, those of us who have maintained any kind of music career through parenting, there's still things that are different than they were before that are not really given space. Like, you know, if you need your start time to be honored because the next day you're going to be waking up with, like, a kid, or... Maybe you even brought the kid with you and they're back at the place you're staying or whatever it is. But, like, I had all kinds of those moments. And it's like it was an expectation to pass as a person who, like, parenthood had not touched me at all. And the thing with the quarantine is, like, or the pandemic, I can't see a scenario where they ask any of us to pretend like this didn't affect us all. So it's nice, the idea of, like, working on something together that we don't have to hide or deny or try to pass as being cool with.
Yeah.
Be a lot more creative energies on the solution this time.
I hope so. I don't want to, I always think we're going to, could be the Hamiltonian in me, but I always assume we just mess everything up. Like, the city of Hamilton never successfully builds or creates anything. It always just knocks down something great and builds up a big turd. I just hope that we, the creative community, does not do the same thing.
Is there no, like, moments where Hamilton has, like, shown through garbage situations?
Yeah, the new football stadium's kind of nice. Kind of. I'd like to say, no, that's it, maybe. You just tear down neighborhoods and build up dirt malls, pretty much. So that's
right. From the outside looking in, the two things that I'm aware of that you have that seem impressive from afar are a committee of people who talk about, like, the music scene in Hamilton.
And I've never met any of those. Are those people, they're real people?
They're real people. I looked it up. Yeah, because Brody is on that. Yeah, Brody's on that list, and so is Bri Webb, because he's, like, managing the Mohawk station. And so I looked it up. There's a whole group of people.
Oh, wow.
Who talk about it. Yeah, and the other one's Art Crawl. Like, you're definitely thought of as a city where artists flourish.
Well, I mean, everyone's saying that Art Crawl is so commodified, and people are just making money off it, and they use Art Crawl to, like, jack real estate and rent to just pay people. Yeah. You can't have nice things, I think, is the bottom line.
Yeah. But you still call Hamilton home.
What is, I guess. You know, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Always be home.
Well, yeah, as a person who's almost always out, is it strange to be in one place for so long? Like, are you feeling...
That was super weird. It's super weird.
Yeah.
I mean, less so now because it's summer and I'm like, I've been camping, which is why I look like Grizzly Adams. And I've been playing all these shows again, which was really, really good. That was the longest I haven't moved around, yeah, in like 20 years. I'm kind of addicted to moving around. Like, even before I played shows, I was always like hitchhiking somewhere, taking a bus somewhere, just moving around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can relate. I had to stop when I had kids, and then I kind of got to move around again a bit, but I can relate to that feeling. I remember living that life for a stretch.
I mean, kids do make it so you can't be away for as long, which maybe is good, because I didn't like being away for that long either. I found stuff. You kind of want to go home at some point.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I didn't really have a bed for a while because I traveled so much I could sleep on other people's beds and stuff. But then when I had a kid, I was like,
tour. That was my plan.
Yeah.
I stay at your house for like 2 weeks and then I'll be gone again very quickly.
Yeah. But when you have a child, you realize they need a bed all the time.
Yeah. Which... Your buddy's not going to give your kid a couch, too.
I had some friends that would, but yeah, not as a permanent solution. No.
I think one of my favorite feelings is like being alone and you don't even have a show, but you're like driving to a show because it's really far and you're like in a hotel. No one knows where you are. And you're just kind of like totally alone. And it's like, it's so crazy. Like, you could just be dead and no one would even know what happened to you or anything. Like, I really like that feeling of just the total random aloneness. Like, if you're in, like, a Super 8 in, like, Red Deer or something.
Wow.
It's so random, you know?
That's actually an experience I've never had. I've never once toured alone.
I love it.
Yeah?
It's good. I mean, you go a little crazy because you don't talk to people as much as you should. But, you know, you get to put what you want on the radio and no one smells. You smell, but you can't smell yourself. Just kind of, I don't know. You're the boss, I guess. And I guess as the older I get, the more controlling I've become.
Yeah.
I want things my way. You know?
Well, I think I have all those experiences. I just am bossing around one or two other people probably in that moment. But well, are you more or less alone right now during the quarantine stuff?
Well, I mean, really, realistically, less, I guess, is because my family's here.
Mm-hmm.
We all kind of hate each other for a lot of long periods of time. But we were all in the same house, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, have you managed to find ways to create kind of your own spaces despite the shared space?
I mean, a little bit. Like, I got my, like, BA room where I, like, write songs, which is just so dirty no one goes in it, so it's just kind of... no one bothers me in there. But I am pretty protective of, like, like staying, like writing material and like working on BA stuff and practicing, which I mean, I find I have to do it. So mm-hmm. I'm very like, I gotta, you know, it's my job.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of friends who like hide out for whole seasons, off seasons from performing or whatever, where it felt like it wasn't that weird to be isolated during the pandemic. But I was curious about people sharing spaces, if like there are things you can pull from the touring life that you can lean into during this time. And yeah, I don't know. I guess like if you...
I don't know if there was much. Because like everything from touring was kind of gone. Like no restaurants, like no bars, no people. It was just me and a 6-year-old and my wife, and it's like staring at each other like The Shining. Like it was,
Are you eating better or worse?
I guess like everyone, I probably went through like the cooking storm where I was making like pupusas and like tamales and all this stuff where I had no business trying to make any of that stuff. Like bagels, making bagels all the time. And then I hit a point where I'm like, I want to go to a restaurant so badly.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I've been getting a lot of takeout now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, it's like so many questions going through my mind of just like that all feel unfair to unpack if they're all mildly dramatic pieces of living through a pandemic.
Well, I mean, everyone's done it. Like, we're all living through it, I guess. I mean, it definitely seems like some people have it a lot worse than other people. Because I went into Harvey's today for my $2 milkshake, and the person behind the counter with their mask on, I was like, I feel bad, you know.
Yeah.
Discount bacon, you live with me.
Yeah, well, I feel like some people went through, like, sort of the front end was, they were kind of a little bit elated. Like, it was a strangely universally enforced vacation and a pause. Yep. And so some people caught up, you know, got a big, deep breath and a break. And then, but maybe, like, didn't spend that time thinking that it was going to go on for very long in some cases. Some people.
Like everyone who's, like, a white-collar worker who works from home is super happy. Like, I had a guy tell me last weekend that COVID is, like, the greatest thing in his life because he can work from home, and he's like, I can see my wife and kid all the time, and it's great. I don't have to go to the office. But I mean, for every person like that, there's 5 people that work at like a no frill. For this, COVID is, you know, their life. But with having to go to work with the pandemic and being nervous and all the other horrible stuff that goes along with it, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I definitely am very lucky that I didn't have to. That I just spent my pandemic playing Zelda with the 5-year-old. You know.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are some of the highlights and some of the hardest parts about the pandemic in terms of your lifestyle?
It seemed like every day was a new low and a new high. Like, I didn't always... I didn't do so good for all of it. Like, I was pretty depressed and miserable. But then I go through periods of being very positive and happy. I don't know. It seemed like... I don't know if that reached any great highs or lows. It was just a series of highs and lows.
What's it like being a dad during the pandemic?
I mean, my kid was super happy to not go to school, but I had to homeschool. Like, dad, like I had to do it, and I stunk at it. He hated it, and I hated it. But I still had to do it. It's not fun. And it was just, it was hard. I found it till we could go outside, because there's only so much to do in your house.
Yeah.
I'm old and tired, so it's, for me, it's, you can watch TV, just play video games. I'm not good parenting. Because all my parenting skills are like, let's go to a movie, or let's go to the mall, or let's go to the parks. It's kind of eliminated my options. So yeah, once we could start hiking and they reopen the, you know, nature stuff, we kind of did a lot of that. And now it's summer, we just basically go swimming all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, about these driveway shows, is this something that you're guessing is going to be like the most likely form to be available for the next while? Do you have like
I'm booking a maritime. I was gonna book a maritime tour, and then I hit a point where, why am I even booking bars at all?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the process to do shows now has changed. You can only play to like 30 people anyway, so why even go inside a bar where there's probably more chance you'll get infected? And it's harder to distance. And even selling the tickets is a new thing. We have to sell tables. Everything's going to be in advance. or I can just go play like Chuck's driveway, and all he has to do is plug in an extension cord, and I don't have to touch anybody, go near anybody, and then I can just drive away, and I make the same amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do it 3 times a day.
Yeah, how are you? How is the money stuff organized for the driveway shows?
I just charge them a fee. It's like everything I do, it's not that high, though people are always complaining. They say it's high, but I think it is. And then they buy merch, and I leave.
So do the people hosting, like, find a way to collect from their friends if they decide they want to try to
I think it's been a pretty mix. Like, I think there's been a couple of them where one guy's probably paid for the whole thing. I mean, it's usually like around $200, so it's not some crazy amount of money. Where if someone was a huge fan and they had $200, I guess. There's people I think $200 to play my driveway, so I mean, I get it. But then there's other shows where I think they charge the cover. I mean, I really leave it up to the people. I leave it up to the driveway. Kind of their driveway, their rules. I don't have to shake anybody's hand. We're done good.
Yeah. Well, do you ever show up to a driveway and it feels like it is totally not being managed appropriately and people are not distancing? Like,
people don't care anymore. COVID is over, I think, for most people.
So what do you do? Like, how do you protect yourself as the performer?
Sanitizer.
Yeah?
Honestly, I got so much hand sanitizer. I mean, I just figure if I'm already going in to just, you know, no frills to buy groceries, like, is it any worse than playing, like, some dude's driveway in Woodstock?
Yeah.
Maybe. Probably it's worse playing the driveway in Woodstock, but I mean, for the most part, people are pretty distant. There have been some stuff where they're not. I find once you get out of the city, they're not as, I don't think it's as much of an issue for people.
What do you think the colder weather equivalent is? Do you think we'll have small gathering spaces that will enable something through?
I think people will straight up just start partying inside.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they should, but I think my feeling is they will. That which also worries me about bars, but it's like, why close the bars? Everyone's like, close the bars. And I'm like, if you close the bars, people, their houses are going to be bars. Like, it's just going to be more party. People are not partying. We're partying.
Yeah. It's really interesting to hear you describe, like, booking a new kind of, like, type of space. Because I definitely went through that, too. That was one of the things that came with bringing my kid on tour, was booking spaces. Bars became the least convenient places to go with only a handful of exceptions. I think the Apollo was always a perfectly fine place to bring my kid because they'd set up like a little kid area and it was really sweet. But for the most part, the shift away from bars and into art spaces and people's homes and stuff has felt really natural and nice. And so it has occurred to me that if I have to do things differently because of the pandemic, I'm maybe already some of the steps on the way there.
Totally. I think people are ready to see music. I'm not sure people are ready to go to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
I think the more people are going to be able to see music not in the bar, I think the less they're going to want to go to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's $7 a beer and it stinks and annoying and dirty and dark. And their house is, the beer is $1 or $2 and they don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you might be right. I'm still trying to sort of come to terms with how sad, or if I'd be sad at all if it was the end of bars. I'm not. That's what I'm still on the fence about.
I mean, I think the reason why I keep always play bars instead of art spaces is because you make more money at bars.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of a mercenary. I mean, I need money, so I mean, and the money at bars is better because the art spaces always want a lot of the money because they don't make money because they're an art space.
Yeah. No,
but the bars
sure.
sell beer, so they're less concerned about trying to grub your candy covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think no matter what the future of this looks like, the monetizing of it is almost certainly going to have to be completely different. There's going to need to be new partners or infrastructures at the table, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, most likely. I mean, the shows are going to continue in venues. It's going to have to, something's going to have to change. I don't know how the venues are going to hang on until April or whatever they think it's going to be.
Well, as a person who loves touring, if there was like a universal basic income rolled out, like I, for example, I know that if I had a universal basic income, I would tour as much, if not more, if I didn't have to worry about the tour being how I made money to survive, and it was just like selling merch and stuff to, as sort of the extra bit of the work. But what, are you a person that if you had compensation coming from somewhere else, you would continue to tour?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'd tour less. I don't know. I mean, my problem is I got these champagne tastes.
Oh, yeah.
I might be good, but I'm going to need stuff. I need some cheese and all this other stuff that might not cover that my cheese bill. I still need to make other money. I mean, it might make it easier to do shows that don't pay well, or shows that are fun, or shows that are risky, or shows that are, you know, in some small town where you don't know if anyone's going to come and you have to take a flyer to do it. If I already know that I'm not going to be, you know, homeless, then why not just play this? You know, you can do, it allows me more adventure. Because usually the highest paying shows are often the worst shows.
Yeah.
And the lowest paying shows are often the most fun.
Do you keep a list? I keep a list of, was it a good show, yes or no? And then, like, would I play there again? And it's interesting how much I got paid.
Is that like a burning hell? He does that too, doesn't he?
He might have started doing that after touring with me, I think.
Yeah, he's got a list of, like, very strict. Nah, they're all fine. If they're that bad, I just never go back.
Yeah.
I usually know halfway through my set, I'm like, do I play Brantford again? And then by the end, I'm like, see you later, Brantford. Please know you. But I know I'll play Brantford again, probably.
Yeah. Well, Brantford, it's an interesting example to use because no one ever knows what Brantford's going to be in a few years.
I find playing Brantford like going to the dentist. I know I got to do it. And every time I'm there, I'm like, man, it's been a while since we've done this. Still not that pleasant. Yeah, here we are.
Well, I have a couple questions that I've been asking everybody, and I would love to ask you. And one is around support. So, just if there's something that's been sort of the burning example of, like, if only this was implemented, so much would be supported, or if you've witnessed something that's been working well that has supported some people that you'd love to see done more, or any kind of example of a form you think support can or should take during this time for people.
I'm probably the wrong person to ask this question. I don't know. I think people need support. I mean, they should have kept up that $2 hero pay. That was the support they could have kept rolling out a bit longer, maybe. I don't think the Weston family, Stewart and Rideau there.
Did they stop that? I didn't even realize.
Oh, yeah, no, they stopped, and I think it admitted it was a scheme to stop people from quitting.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, not that it was a surprise, but, yeah. Stuff like that. I mean, I think they see what other countries are doing with the venues because I pay attention to that because it's my job, and I think Canada could do more. I mean, it seems like Montreal is going to start. They rolled out a pretty good fund for smaller independent music venues. And I know England, like, furloughed a lot of the staff from pubs and people that worked in venues, so they were still getting a salary, even though, and they were basically paying them to not work. And I know Wales just gave every single store, brick and mortar store, like £10,000 to close.
Wow.
So why didn't we do stuff like that? You know, like, it seemed like we just kind of were like, close, hope you don't go bankrupt. I think we could have done, like, more for people.
Well, that's such an interesting, like, observation, because I didn't really notice that. It's one thing to support or compensate, but to straight up, like, basically pay to close. So that is both support and enforcement of an extent of shutdown. That really, that's pretty awesome.
I mean, why are the banks the only people making money?
Yeah.
Maybe the banks don't get to make money, and we just pick a pause button and let everyone just not pay rent and mortgages for 3 months, and then they just pay them again at the end of it. And then you don't have to worry about going to work or, like, all this other stuff, because they're not going to get evicted.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice example because, like, some people manage to stay open in some way, and or in the case of somewhere like Guelph, they rolled out these massive patios, but they only benefit the people from that one street who happen to be adjacent to where the patios are. So if you're a bar one block over, you have none of that availability.
I mean, it's not equal. And I mean, even with the giant patio, I bet they're not making the money they were making anyway.
No, I doubt
anything
it.
Anything that's just treading water kind of money where they can just pay their bills and keep their lights on. And they can go off to work like crazy in a pandemic.
So beers for over 150 years, pickled eggs and about 50 trays. But now you are a condo, now you are a condo. Fluorescent lights and the cigarette smoke and the best bartender for which you could hope. Oh, I miss the pig's ear, I miss the pig's ear tavern.
Yeah, and I think people like hang out just as long because they're excited to be out of their house, but I don't think they keep going to the bar, so to speak. I don't think they're spending the kind of money that they were, yeah.
No, yeah, with curb running out and people work so uncertain, I really do people have that much money to spend?
I don't know. Well, the other question I've been asking people is one around silver linings. So some positive things have emerged in spite of the fact that we are living through a global pandemic. So not making any kind of light of how hard that's been, but that things sometimes are possible or emerge at unexpected times. And I'm wondering if there's anything you've seen happening during this time that you would actually love to see continued, even if we got to go back to our kind of previous way of doing things.
I mean, I think the working from home is pretty good for a lot of people. And I think everyone I know who's working from home is working. Like, they're not just sitting around. Like, they're actually working, probably harder. Like, my dad still works. He's a spring salesman, but he just works all day now on his computer. Whereas I bet he was at work, he probably wasn't working that long or that hard. So it's like, it allows him to kind of be at home, goes on to commute, which just cuts down on pollution. And it seems like, in some ways, the whole pause, like, and kind of staying at home, even though everything was scary, very scary, it was kind of nice to do that. I mean, as much as I love traveling around, it was probably a good thing for me to, like, sit in my house for a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I'd like to see more, like, do we really need to work 5 days a week? Maybe we should work 4 days a week. I don't know. I only work 2 days a week, mostly, so. But I kind of like working 2 days a week. It really, my 5 day not working is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope that as things unfold and we see what this turns into, that there's a way for the things we liked about music before reemerging in some form. And I'm also hope that some new things pop out that surprise us, I guess. But
I hope so too.
Yeah. Well, for people listening who want to check out your children's book, Gary the Seagull, and or your music as B.A. Johnson, are there some links that you would like to share for people to check out your stuff?
Gary the Seagull, my book is available through your local bookstore as well. Actually, just get it from your local bookstore, but if you don't have one, you can get it from Evil and Amazon has it. And Indigo, maybe they're less evil, I don't know, but they got it. My music, you can find B.A. Johnson on Evil Spotify, or preferably, you can get it, most of my records through your local store. I'm on Twitter, at B.A. Johnson. I'm on Facebook, Evil Facebook, at B.A. Johnson. I'm on Instagram at Old B.A. Johnson.
Okay. Can you spell Johnson for your listeners?
Oh, Johnson with a T.
Okay.
I don't always say it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for connecting with me tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
Bye, B.A.
See you later.
So once again, that was B.A. Johnston, a musician based out of Hamilton, Ontario, who just released a children's book called Gary the Seagull. You can find Gary the Seagull at your local bookstores. You can find B.A.'s music online and at bajohnston.bandcamp.com.
Eating Domino's pizza with you in the dark. I'm so tired, but there's no place that I'd rather be. Let me give you some of this tired love. Let me give you some of this tired love. Let me give you some of this tired love. Let me give you some of this tired love.
Brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.
This is CIOI, 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
Move.
Welcome in to Jazz in Session here on 101.5 The Hawk and CFRU 93.3. My name's Kareem Mosnap. And this week on the show, well, you know, every song we play on the show, of course, with the exception of, you know, sometimes non-album singles, all comes from great records, from great albums. But oftentimes we only just hear the one song from that one album, then followed by a completely different artist and a completely different album. Well, today we're going to try something a bit different. We're going to play two songs